This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris, and it's time for All Tech Considered. Today, kids in tech. We asked for your stories about kids who play with and mangle your iPods and your cell phones, and we got lots of great responses on Twitter and on our All Tech Considered blog. NPR's Laura Seidel has some of the stories of kids who can't keep their hands to themselves.
Erin Connor had just finished a call on her cell phone when her one-year-old niece looked up at her and her phone.
So she reaches up for it, and she's saying, ooh, ooh, ooh.
It was so cute. The toddler wanted Connor's phone, so she turned it off and handed it to her. Bad call. The phone went directly into the mouth. The next time Connor tried to use her cell phone,
I try to call someone, and it's like I'm talking from the bottom of a well. There's almost no sound, and they can't hear me, and I can't hear them.
And when mom Jill Fondriest wasn't looking, her 18-month-old son dialed 911 on her cell phone, police showed up at her door.
I explained to him what happened and kind of pointed out my youngest and told the officer, you know, there's the culprit. There he is. Take him. I need some sleep.
And Marco Nellison's 3-year-old loved to press the buttons on his smartphone, and it kind of got in the way of business.
Deleting emails, calling random people, deleting my contacts.
Nellison also happens to be a software engineer at Google, so he decided to come up with a solution. It's called the Toddler Lock, and you can download it for Google's Android phones. Your toddler can use it to draw pictures, but they're locked out of everything else. There are similar kinds of applications for the iPhone. Of course, that doesn't work if they stick the phone in the mouth.
We heard a lot of horror stories about an iPhone in the toilet and all sorts of things.
Jim Gray is a director of learning at the toy maker Leapfrog. The company is about to release a toy smartphone for kids 3 years and up. The fake phone doesn't actually connect to the internet, but it does have interactive features, such as a dog named Scout on the screen that talks.
Hi! Push the letter button to check out some letters.
So kids learn things like the QWERTY keyboard. They learn how to navigate with arrow keys. They learn letter recognition. And at the same time, they can actually interact in a safe way with the character on the screen.
The Leapfrog toy has music and games like a smartphone. Gray thinks kids like their parents' phones because children just want to do what the adults around them are doing. The question is whether or not they'd be satisfied with Leapfrog's imitation or whether they will still want the real thing to call 911 and send emails to their parents' bosses. Laura Seidel, NPR News.
And we're joined now by our tech expert, Omar Gayaga. And in this case, we can also call him Dada Gayaga because he's also the father of a toddler and he knows a thing or two about putting handheld devices into the hands of young people. Hello, Omar.
Hi, thanks for having me, Michelle.
Now, as we said, we put the call out to our listeners for their child tech mishaps, and you've picked a couple of favorites from the All Tech Considered blog. What do you have for us?
Right. It seems like every parent has a story about their kid and some technological disaster in the house. Some of the stories we heard about included a 19-month-old who knows how to unlock an iPhone and bring up Elmo videos on YouTube, which was fine until the boy lost the phone somewhere in the house. And last we heard, the mom still hadn't found it.
Did she try to call it? Maybe that would be one way.
Or... yeah, it's on silent, so she's not able to look
at it
in a couple
work,
of
then.
Days. Over on Twitter, we heard about a kid who had dropped a BlackBerry into a crawfish fryer. And another who sent a company-wide email to dad's coworkers.
Right.
It was a blank email.
Whoa. Rewind. A child dropped a BlackBerry into a crawfish fryer? A child was that
so
close?
We heard.
Hopefully the child tossed the BlackBerry into the crawfish fryer so it wasn't close enough to just drop it in there.
Sounds dangerous. We didn't get confirmation on this, but if you're a parent, it sounds very, very likely to me that this really happened.
Anything else?
We had one parent. On the other side of the coin, we had one parent share a story of a 5-year-old boy with a nonverbal form of autism who actually learned to spell words with an iPhone app called First Words. So it's not all disaster and carnage when it comes to kids and tech toys.
Yeah, that actually sounds very inspiring. Now, as we mentioned, you're a parent. And while many parents try very hard to keep their handheld devices away from their kids, it sounds like you actually encourage your child to pick up your iPhone and play with it.
Sometimes, yeah. I always try to keep an eye on the screen to make sure she's not deleting anything or, heaven forbid, dialing 911. We are starting to see some apps geared toward toddlers and younger kids, like multimedia bedtime stories and About a year ago, the most entertaining thing in the world for my kid was an app called More Cowbell, which was inspired by the Saturday Night Live skit with Will Ferrell. You just touch the screen where there's this giant image of a cowbell, and it just makes the ringing sound of a cowbell. It was perfect for her. I just had to keep an eye on her, make sure she didn't shake the phone and throw it across the room.
So the people in the next booth over at the local restaurant must really love you.
We keep her at home when we're going to do stuff like that.
So if you are one of those parents who actually doesn't mind sharing your PDA or your handheld device with your child, what do you do to protect your data from accidental erasure?
Well, most smartphones have a built-in way to password protect the phone from access. Usually it's just a four-digit code, and unless your toddler moonlights as a hacker, they probably won't get past that. But unfortunately, there is still a way to dial 911 when, say, the keyboard is locked on a lot of phones. So if you really, really want to be safe, you're going to want to drain the battery completely from the phone or take the battery out and make sure they can't do anything on it. But then it kind of defeats the purpose of having your kid play with some of the apps on the phone. So the best bet, I think, is always to just keep an eye on the kid.
So I'm having this image of your daughter. How old is she now?
She is almost 2 years old, 20
Okay,
months.
So old enough almost to start trying to call another two-year-old and have a conversation.
I think I'm going to try to get the tin cans and the string for her instead, maybe try to get back to that old school
version. Worked for generations. Well, enough about protecting your technology from your kids. How about this question? Protecting your kids online, especially when they're using technology like computers and laptops. Well, that's the subject for next week, and we want to know what you think on the NPR All Tech Considered blog. Send us your questions at npr.org/alltech. You can also find more stories from parents like the ones we shared with you today. One more thing before I let you go, Omar, on a completely different subject. We want to remind our listeners that the delayed digital television transition day is once again looming. They moved the deadline, and it's coming up, and it's at the end of this week. Want to tell us a little bit more about what we should expect?
Right. We talked about this back in February, back when the original cutoff date was set, but it was delayed to June. And now after this Friday, you'll only be able to receive digital signals from broadcasters. And if you don't already have cable, satellite, or TV that can receive digital signals, you'll need a digital converter box. We'll be talking about that online on the blog today. And we'll be linking to the original story, and there'll be lots of information about what you need to do, and we will point you there on the AllTech blog.
Perfect. Always good to talk to you, Omar.
Thanks for having me.
That's Omar Gayaga of the Austrian American Statesman. This is NPR, National Public Radio. I'm going to do my best to channel Iowa Republican Senator Charles Grassley here. Actually, I'm going to try to act out the irate tweets that Senator Grassley fired off using Twitter yesterday. The first tweet was this: Prez Obama, you got nerve while you sightseeing in Paris to tell us time to deliver on health care. We still on schedule, even working weekend. The second tweet was this: Prez Obama, while you sightseeing in Paris, you said time to deliver on health care. When you are a hammer, you think everything is nail. I'm no nail. I can't do justice to the all caps or the abbreviations in there. Well, here to talk about the perils of politicians issuing broadsides in 140 characters or less is Clay Johnson. He worked on the tech-savvy Howard Dean campaign. He's now with the Sunlight Foundation, which advocates for the use of social media in politics. And Clay Johnson, sounds like you will be a defender of tweets and politicians' right to use them.
That's right, yeah.
How would you assess this performance by Charles Grassley here?
Well, you know, he may not be the most prolific writer in 140 characters or less, but there's something really authentic about it. I'm not going to lie. As you're reading it, I'm sort of laughing like a schoolgirl over here at how the grammar. I mean, for the listeners, it's hard because, you know, weekend is spelled W-K-N-D. And
I think you put one E in
yeah.
there.
It's short on vowels. It's not the most well-written thing, but there's something really authentic here. In a world where, you know, we get these emails from candidates all the time or hear speeches from candidates all the time that are, you know, well-prepared and eloquent and, you know, they say, today I need you to go and vote for blah, 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 blah. Here's something authentic that an actual member of Congress has written. Members of Congress don't write those emails. They rarely write their own speeches. Here's how a member of Congress writes.
Okay, so when Charles Grassley says, Prez Obama, you got nerve, that to you is not rude. That's refreshing.
There's two sides of the coin here, right? So It is refreshing. I wish Senator Grassley was a better writer, but it is a little refreshing. So I'll take what I can get.
Can you tell how many members of Congress, high-profile members of the administration, are tweeting?
I remember
this came up during the State of the Union address. Some of them were actually sitting there in Congress.
Sending out tweets.
Yeah.
There are, I think, about 200 members of Congress are now tweeting. And I'd say that actually, like, Republicans outnumber Democrats about 2-1 on Twitter. Last year, we ran a Let Our Congress Tweet campaign. That let me go throughout the Sunlight Labs office and sing "Let Our Congress Tweet" all the time to actually make it to change the rules so that members of Congress could use Twitter from the floor, and that was a lot of fun.
You need a new theme song.
I know it's now it's "Let Our Congress Tweet Grammatically Correctly" or something like that.
Something like that. Clay Johnson, thanks for coming in.
Absolutely.
Clay Johnson advocates for government transparency and the unfettered use of social media in Congress for the Sunlight Foundation.
To get a video gamer's heart racing and mouth watering, all you have to do is say E3. The E3, or Electronic Entertainment Expo, is where the world's video game companies come together in California to show off their latest games. Today's the expo's last day. This is a place where you could hear this video demonstration of the latest game for Xbox, a real person interacting with a virtual one. See if you can tell which is which.
I could just try to catch some fish. Draw some pictures in my journal. Maybe I'll do okay this time.
I think that's a good idea.
She, Claire, is real, and he, Milo, is virtual. Ricardo Torres is real. He's editor-in-chief for GameSpot.com, a video games website, and he's on the line with us from the E3 Expo. Tell us about that Microsoft demo that we just heard a bit of, and what's new about it.
It was very cool new technology, but also a little spooky. Basically, the game, or the tech demo, was called Milo and Kate. And Kate is a dog that we didn't actually see, but Milo is a young boy. And the application uses brand new technology that Microsoft debuted at E3. It's currently codenamed Project Natal. And what it is, it's an accessory for your Xbox 360. It's a camera with microphones built into it. And what this camera does is it scans your body, and it kind of makes a map of it, and it tracks you in the game. So in this particular tech demo, the camera scans you and gives your body control of where you're viewing. So if you walk forward, the camera pans forward. If you walk back, it pans back. If you look to your left or your right, the camera does that. And the really almost disturbing bit of it is, because it's tracking you, Milo, who's the young boy in the demo, is aware of you.
Yeah, it's almost like having a virtual friend inside the game.
Yeah, and it was so cool, but it was also mind-blowing because, I mean, I started playing on the Atari 2600, and we were pretty blown away when we saw Pong. So it's kind of crazy to imagine that this happened basically in my gaming lifetime, that we saw such a quantum leap.
Ricardo, beyond the hardware, are there any new trends that you detect there as to what kinds of things people are playing, what the themes or locales are that they're transporting themselves to in these games?
The trends right now really are for accessibility, obviously, because that's what everybody was doing. They wanted to show you how easy and accessible it was to play their game. And the other, I think, key thing is customization. I think a lot of the games that we saw that were newly announced just allow you to do a high amount of customization to really personalize the game character, the gameplay experience. Sony announced a new racing game that allowed just almost total customization. You can create your own racetracks, your own environments, your own cars, your own drivers, you know, and it's very cutesy and engaging. So, you know, I think users they're very open to the experiences that developers want to provide them. But at the same time, I think we're seeing more and more hunger to create your own thing, to create something that is kind of intrinsically you.
Well, Ricardo, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Ricardo Torres, editor-in-chief of GameSpot.com, speaking to us from the E3, the Electronic Entertainment Expo, in Los Angeles.